Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
And it is time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. And as usual, if you've a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question, there's a bit of a theme going on this week, as a few people have pointed out, seeing we're talking about shampoo yesterday. Anyway, today's question, why do we have hair? Graham, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean.
Is it actually your hair that grows or something underneath the hair that's growing?
That's a really, really good question. I mean, one of the questions is, why do we have hair and why aren't we hairier, right? But hair is an amazing thing. So the follicle, which is inside your skin, has stem cells, and you know these create stem cells, right? Or has stem cells, and they create new hair, which eventually new cells, they divide quite rapidly, like stem cells do, and they push the old cells out of the skin, and that's what the hair is, and that's why hair is dead, and which is why you can cut it without screaming all the time.
Yes.
So while we tend to focus on the visible hair, all the action is actually under the surface. And these are incredibly complex little devices which do amazing things. First of all, they can get, through a complex process, sort of nutrition from the and oxygen from the blood in your scalp, right? Which is one reason why your scalp bleeds a lot, and it's very, very, very blood-rich area. But they also are very, very adaptive. So different kinds of hair on different parts of your body will have very, very different life cycles. So the hair on the top of your head, there's an active phase and a resting phase. The hair on the top of your head, it's 5 to 7 years. And that's one of the things we've selected for over time, is to have thick, long hair on the top of our head, which grows quite proficiently. The hair on other parts of your body can be very, 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 very short. I mean, especially the hairs on your arms or something like that. Now, the hairs in the pubic region under your arms are also grow quite quickly. But they have a shorter active period than the hair on your scalp.
Right.
But what's really interesting is, you know, in people who are challenged by male pattern baldness, for example, all those follicles, you know.
You're not challenged by it. You just accept it.
You just accept it. I'm getting there myself, you know, gaining acceptance. Yeah. I'm in denial. No, I'm not. I'm far past denial. Anyway, you know, it's interesting that when those hairs fall out, they actually get quite fine and then die. I mean, that's happening on your head all the time. But when it starts to show a pattern, people sometimes thought it was that they were communicating between each other with chemicals, but it doesn't seem to be the case. It just seems to be the case that your hormones, if you're prone to male pattern baldness, basically dictate this in all of the hairs of the certain areas which are affected. Meanwhile, the hairs on the back of your head, which are not part of the typical pattern of male pattern baldness, don't get this message. And so if you take hairs from the parts where men tend to go bald and put them somewhere else, they're still going to fall out. If you take hairs from the back of your head, and that's what they do when they shoot hair into your head, you know, which just sounds unpleasant, they will not fall out. They'll keep growing like normal hair because they're not programmed to do that. They're from the wrong part of the head.
Yeah.
And it's even true that if you take hair from other parts of your body and shoot it into your head, a part of your head where
you don't want to shoot your pubic hair into the top of your head, for instance.
Well, one of the things you can do is actually it takes on the characteristic of the part of the body it's being shot into.
Ah, right.
Cool.
Okay. That's a relief. Yeah.
But because if you're suffering from baldness, the reason they don't shoot pubic hairs into the top of your head is that it'll just be programmed to fall out like all the other ones. So you could take all the hair off the back of your head and then put pubic hair in the back, and you'd have quite the hairstyle.
Right. Now, why isn't it the case then that hair just keeps growing all over? Some people are hairier than others, but people would have hair on various parts of their body. Why doesn't it just keep growing indefinitely?
Well, the answer seems to be evolution. I mean, so we think of ourselves as the hairless ape, or the much less hairier than our ape relatives. But in fact, we have as many hairs as a chimpanzee.
Oh.
They're just much, much finer. And so we have as many, we have 5 million hairs all over our body. But whereas a chimpanzee would have thick hair on, say, the arms and so forth, you know, we have the vellum, the sort of downy hairs, which aren't doing too much and actually probably don't serve any evolutionary purpose. We all, like chimpanzees, we have no hair on our palms. We have no hair on the soles of our feet, same places as they do. So the reason we don't grow hair constantly is or as thick as chimpanzees is because at some point it was evolutionarily valuable for us to retain, to lose some of the hair and to lose its thickness, right? Now, again, if it never stopped growing, then we'd be completely covered in hair, and it would be inconvenient. And again, it seems like everything has its sort of life cycle in the body, and hairs are like that. Most people, even people who are not going bald, men or women or whatever, everybody's losing hair, but they're just not losing it, you know, in a way that is particularly noticeable.
Yeah.
Right. So it just seems to be part of the life cycle of the hair that it stopped growing and fall out. And that's happening all the time. In fact, it's particularly true of the hair on our arms and so forth, that it's constantly sort of falling out. Mm-hmm. Again, perhaps because it's not doing much of a job.
Yeah. Oh, but are there theories as to why, and I assume this happened over time, we became more and more hairless?
Yes. And there are many theories, some somewhat silly and some slightly more credible. Unfortunately, you know, many of these are the kind of sort of hypothetical evolutionary stories which we like to tell ourselves, right? So we'll start with the funnest one, maybe, the aquatic ape hypothesis, which is that at some point, crucial point for our hair development, we spent all our time in the water, you know, and like dolphins and whales, other mammals which have hair. Whales have hair.
Okay.
Not a lot. Oh, some whales have hair, and they lose it often after birth, you know. But anyway, whales have hair. So that's one theory. There doesn't seem to be terrific amounts of evidence that we were living like dolphins, right? But it's a nice thought.
Yeah.
You know, another theory is that really long hair tends to accumulate parasites, and that leads to disease, and that's not good. And so we selected for a slightly parasite-less lifestyle. But again, then we think about all the animals which have fur and hair.
Mm.
They're still around, so it's not entirely clear. So the most common theory is that when human beings stopped climbing trees and foraging among the trees and came out onto the savanna back, so there was a period about 1.7, 2 million years ago when Central Africa, where we were all at the time, sort of warmed up and dried out considerably. Mm. And so suddenly most of the food was going to be out there on the grasslands. So you have to change, and we became bipedal, right? We stopped moving around hunched over, but started to walk upright, and we were having to hunt and cross large areas of grass as a result. And so hair is not as useful for its primary reason, which is to keep the body cool. It's very good for thermoregulation, right? So, if you are cold suddenly, you get goosebumps, and that's the hair on your body standing up to give a little more of a pocket around you in which to retain warm air, right? If you, however, are getting really hot as you're chasing an animal across the savanna, then you want to be able to cool down quickly, and having a big furry hairy coat is not so conducive to that. And in fact, a lot of the other predators on the savanna weren't able to do that. They tend to hunt at night or very, very briefly during the day, because all they can do is pant and sort of, you know, lie around cool places and lie in the shade and so forth. So that's why lions, especially male lions, are incredibly lazy and, you know, mostly sit around all day, right? That's why your house cat does that, right? You know, and that's why your dog pants, you know, and gets tired before you do sometimes. So we're running across the grasslands for long periods of time, and we got rid of the hair, which wasn't really necessary. So which was keeping us from keeping cool. And so, but we kept it on the top of our head. Why? Because it's most exposed to the sun. This is how the story goes.
Anyway, yeah.
Right. And in fact, the hotter the place you're in, the more likely you might be to have curly hair, because curly hair is good at blocking the sun.
Hmm.
Right. And so for all those reasons, we kept a lot of this long growing hair on our head. Right. And then we retained hair of a sort of useful sort in certain parts of the body, pubic hair, underarms. And then there's another further story about why we might do that.
Yes, right. So it's probably pretty commonsensical why we have hair in our nostrils and ears, presuming that's to keep out buggings.
That is incredibly useful hair. And in fact, one of the interesting things about the body, and we've talked about this in various contexts, is the role of hair-like structures generally to move things around, to sense things. But in the case of nostrils, ears, to keep sort of dirt and animals or bugs out of the body, and so hair is extremely useful for that kind of thing, and those There are some theories which suggest that sort of pubic hair might be useful for that. There's also the chafing theory, which is that we've retained hair on under our arms all around the natal cleft, as I believe doctors call it, you know, including your butt, right, and stuff like that. Because chafing otherwise is going to occur, and hair is good for avoiding chafing.
Right.
Right. So including during sex or the possible, you know, introduction of dirty particles into your body, especially the female body, during sex.
Right.
So there's that theory. But then there's all sorts of signaling theories about why we have this particular hair growing in abundance when it's not really growing anywhere else in our body.
Which are. Yeah.
Well, there's the crude signaling, which is that that hair tends to trap, especially under the arms, right, sweat from the apocrine glands, which are under the arms. And those contain pheromones, which are a powerful way to signal to other people that you might be attractive. And, you know, a big part of the sexual chemistry, which keeps us all around. And also, people have noticed that this hair tends to appear after puberty, right? So, again, it might be at the time in which it's good for people to start thinking about engaging in sexual activity for reproduction from an evolutionary point of view. Now, I'm going to leave, like, whether it's a good idea, you know, in 2018 to other people, guidance counselors and people like that, parents. But anyway, so there's that.
Yeah.
But then also there was the idea that somehow female pubic hair in particular, and the fact that women generally have less hair than men, including on their faces, but also on their bodies, might be a sign that this hairless being, a woman, right, a relatively hairless being, is actually now capable of reproduction, right? So it shows it's a good sign if you're crude evolutionary thinking that the woman's gone through puberty and is now a viable candidate to mate with.
Mm.
Right? Now, that's an interesting question. I mean, all of this stuff is somewhat hypothetical. Another hypothetical story about why women have less hair than men generally is that they, you know, were selected for by men and that hairlessness seemed like a sign of superior thermoregulation system. And so the men, having more power to select their mates, being more powerful, kept choosing relatively hairless females, right? And that's, whereas the women didn't have as much a say in this kind of thing, and that's why the men are generally hairier.
Right, okay. And the men are generally hairier, so they can be blasting out pheromones in all directions.
Stuff like that, but also maybe they can thermoregulate somewhat better, but it just wasn't selected for by the women because they didn't have as much choice in the all-selection process.
So according to this theory, then, the armpit hair is just to collect sweat and send out wafts of sexiness.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be, it seems like it's useful because it's been selected for pretty constantly by people. Whether it's the pheromones or whether it's, again, thermodynamics, you lose a lot of heat under your arms, right? So you might need a pretty impressive and dynamic system to regulate heat down there. Again, the groin also, you know, all the places where we have this post-puberty hair tend to be places where there's a lot of sweating and release of sweat and heat and moisture. It's a good place for thermoregulation. But again, these are both men and women. These involve the hormone androgen, which is produced during puberty and afterwards. But men get a lot more of it. The clue's in the name, I guess, androgen, than women, right? So all of that makes a certain amount of sense from a crude evolutionary standpoint. Beard hair is a little harder, right? And in fact, there you get some really crazy just-so stories, which are about, you know, which are seem to be still in play. So beards are actually really complicated. Men, we've had clean-shaven cultures. We've had, you know, very, very beardy cultures like the late 19th century in England.
Mm.
And studies have been done about both the history of beards, but also beards today, because we're in sort of a renaissance of beards right now.
Mm.
Now, some people have argued that luxuriant beards, or beards period, are often selected in times when there are very, very few females around, right? When the actual options for men are limited. And that apparently was the case in late 19th century Britain, for example, where some people have gone through all the popular magazines of the day and picked out all the pictures of beards and counted them. And I'm glad, I'm sure they got a grant for it, you know? And so these crazy beards of the late 19th century eventually have given way to the ongoing age of increasingly less hair on men's faces until like a few years ago. Right, and I think we've probably reached peak beard, and we're now going in another direction.
And well, people say that every year
is
the end for the beard. I did read one theory that claimed that said that the beard craze started around 10 years ago, actually, and coincided with the economic crash.
That would make a certain amount of sense.
And so then men who felt kind of financially emasculated thought, I'll grow a
big
beard instead.
With beards, you know. Yeah. Because, yeah, beards and deep voices and all these things convey dominance to some degree. They certainly convey higher social status and age. And
yes.
So people look at a man and, you know, this is cross-cultural and, you know, assume that he's of higher status. So it's really pretty much for other men as much as it is for females because you're competing with them.
Yeah, there you go. That's me and Graham Finley, both shaven, so both therefore lower status. Graham, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalized pricing, our rates are made for you.